Welcome to the NLX Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are diving into another fix-it series here, a Sunday strategy session for the running back position. So fixing running backs, how are we going to do that? Some thoughts that I have here. I think this is a largely a fixable issue. And I do, you know, this series is sort of meant to be a little bit foundational, right? And a little bit, it's a blend of sort of AOD theory versus application or intertwined with application. And so we're going to talk about some of the stuff that we sort of know about the positions and then, you know, figure out ways to implement them. So I do think fixing running back and fixing wide receiver, it's different ways to do it, but I think they're amongst the easiest ways, the easiest positions to fix. I think it's best understood when you're trying to fix running back. Think of the actual problem that you're trying to fix. Are you trying to fix is it a small fix, right? Is it sort of a medium fix, or is you trying to make a long-term fix? Is it a week-to-week issue, right? Are you trying to fix this year? Are you trying to fix long-term? I would sort of begin each one of these problems at running back, at least with, let's try and fix it with the easy stuff without spending a lot of money, without spending a lot of, a lot of picks or a lot of assets on fixing the position. Let's make sure we're properly optimized, because just that alone will help fix the position. So let's start there. If you have a hole at running back, okay, you don't have a season-long hole at running back, okay? You don't have a hole that you need to fix in July. You don't have a hole you need to fix in August. You don't have a hole come week three that you need to fix for the next 2 months, right? You have what you actually have in the regular season is a series of 14-week holes in your lineup that you need to fix, okay? You don't need to know now. You don't need to know when you make a draft pick in January. You don't need to know now when you're making a trade in July. You don't need to know when you're setting your lineup in week three what week four solution is going to be, okay? It is a series of 14 spots, 14 lineup spots that you have to fix once a week for 14 weeks, okay? Is it, if you could start Jonathan Taylor in 2021, is that the ideal solution? Absolutely. Is that a realistic solution in every situation? No, right? We have other holes in our lineup that just can't be fixed by the best player in the game, right? And again, is it something that you're going to need a fix for every week, right? You might not, you might need to sort of rotate guys through, but you might have a series of starters in your lineup and a couple of them go down. So you have to start figuring out ways to fill 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks in your lineup, right? That's stuff that can sort of fluctuate in season, your actual need to fix it on a weekly basis, right? So just keep that in mind. So we are talking specific running back spots. Again, if it's just a flex position, right, if you're trying to fix the flex, right? Again, I advocate a lot of what we do because I think it fixes the flex position, but I'm just right now talking about fixing a running back spot. You can also use a lot of the principles here. If you're fixing running back, you're probably fixing running back also to the benefit of your flex too, but you can do other stuff there at tight end as well, like in premium formats and stuff. But this is specifically for your running back specific needs. So again, it's 14 individual weeks. Don't all need to be the same player. This is different than quarterback. It can be different than tight end too. I think quarterback, right? You can survive 1, 2 weeks, maybe a month, right? Sort of streaming a starter or actually even playing a non-quarterback in your super flex spot. Like you can do that. Like that's a solution to your problem at quarterback. But if you have to depend on it for an entire season, you're going to struggle. Right, you're likely going to struggle. At running back, you won't struggle. You're probably going to prosper, right? So, just keep that in mind, right? That the solutions to these different positions are different just by the nature of it, right? There is a lot more starts at running back, a lot more fungible than they are at quarterback, right? You just, even though you might get 50, 60 guys starting at quarterback, how many of them are really going to trust in a given week? And again, right, as you sort of rotate through, there's a lot more games that are started by different running backs. So just some thoughts there. So some small fixes, right? The first thing, if you have a problem at running back, the first thing that you should do to look at, right, optimize your roster. I think you have to optimize two different things. You want to optimize specifically your running backs, and you want to optimize the construction of your roster as well. So just looking specifically at your running back spots, right? Just look at the running backs and think, is this situation optimized? Do you have a running back on your roster who you do not think is a clear injury away from a spot start? And if you have that running back who you don't think is a straight injury away guy, is there someone available on the waiver wire? Right? Is there someone available on the waiver wire that you see someone on the back end of your roster that's not a clear injury away guy? And I'm not talking, I'm talking back end of your roster guys, right? I'm not talking about is TDP the week 3 starter if Elijah Mitchell goes down, right? Like that's a little bit more of a dynasty centric conversation. We're talking more like end of roster, which we really should be treating more as redrafty as we get sort of into these, into the human hand grenade section of our lineup, right? That's much more, that's much more redrafty. So that's really the nature of the position we're looking at, right? Is there someone that's not you don't have a clear cut answer on whether or not they're a clear injury away guy, but there is one that you think is on the waiver wire? Cut your player, add the clear injury away guy, right? And you should be doing this on a weekly basis, right? Get in the rhythm of doing this, right? And this can change, right? I mean, I went through 10, 15 of these just last year where you're just cycling back through. And every week in Pittsburgh, it would be different. And I would look like, if you went back and looked, you'd be like, man, Jordan was like a maniac, like dealing with the Pittsburgh situation. It was Benny Snell on and off. And there were some other guys that were like inactive in certain weeks. And we're trying to gauge, who's valuable in all sorts of different spots, and you're like, all right, well, you just keep cutting, and who's the guy in Tennessee, and you're sort of fluctuating in and out, and just constantly trying to churn, right? That stuff will produce results for you. And again, it takes work, but just optimizing those running back roster spots. The second small fix is really optimizing your roster construction. How much of your roster does the running back position take up? If you're looking at the back end of your roster, think critically about how the receivers help you. There's really two things to look at. If you have a receiver on your bench spot that's not really a pure dynasty play, what do I mean by that? That, it's a day two or better young player, right? Like, so that's sort of be your line. If there's a person that is on your bench that does not fit that, right, they need to be able to answer one of two questions for you, okay? They either need to be a candidate for a sharp increase in trade value through some fact pattern, or they need to be a potential lineup spot starter for you early on in the season. Okay. If that receiver is not one of those two things, they are roster fodder. Okay. And you have to get them off your roster. You can cut them and add running backs. One of my favorite things to do is to use that as a trade vehicle, right? I'm constantly using trades to sort of launder my roster, right? I'm constantly looking, every bigger deal is a roster optimization deal. I'm trying to tack on the back of that deal a wide receiver to a running back flip-flop, or a wide receiver to a tight end flip-flop, right? You're trying to constantly sort of optimize your roster and use the bigger trade as a way to sort of launder that move, right? It's as a way to say, all right, like maybe this person, like I'll give you a great example. Just this week, I wanted to make a Deshaun Watson trade, right? I was really shooting to trade for Deshaun Watson. I think the suspension is going to come down pretty soon, and I think we're going to be, right, I want to get in on him before that suspension comes down, because I think his price is going to go up. And so part of what I was looking to do was, all right, I have the Watson-centric aspect of this, but this is also an orphan team that I took over. So what am I going to do? Well, I need to cut someone to sort of roster Watson. Okay, so that's one position going from wide receiver to quarterback. That's fine. So I included, I think it was like Kendrick Bourne. But I also had Jameson Crowder and a whole bunch of other guys on my roster that just, it's a lot of roster spots, right? And so I said, I need to sort of turn one of those into a running back. And this became a critical aspect of the deal for me. Right? I needed to turn Jameson Crowder into a running back. And that ends up being Jamal Williams, right? So what have I done? I've gone from having 11 wide receivers on my lineup and my roster to having to trading one of them in a deal to get the quarterback and the other one in a deal to get the running back. And so now I've taken it from 11 to 9. Again, it's still too many, but we're streamlining. But we're constantly using that back end of those deals to try and tack on stuff that optimizes your roster, right? Launder your roster, right? Launder your roster as a way to get rid of your roster fodder and add in injury way running backs, right? I kind of dig that. So that's like your medium stuff, right? I think that's your low hanging fruit. And again, at running back, you can do that a lot. I'm constantly sort of trading away running back depth for, for solutions at other positions, right? And I think that I'm constantly doing that because I'm like, all right, I can just constantly churn and burn, right? I can count to 14 and we can sort of figure it out, right? And we can sort of figure it out along the way. I think that there's, in terms of medium measures that I would consider, there's a couple of different ways to do this. I tend to really like deals that arbitrage down at the position and add, but are additive. So what do I mean by that? I am moving down the position in terms of if I'm trading away the best running back in a deal, and let's just say instead of picking names, let's just pick positions and we'll just use even numbers to make it easy. Running back 10, and we move from running back 10, we move down to running back 20, but we're getting stuff added on, right? That could be picks, it could be wide receiver help, it could be an upgrade at tight end, it could be additional running back help, right? There's a variety of different ways to do this. Okay, a variety of different ways to do this, right? But I think that's the key, that's one of the key things is arbing down. What am I trying to do here? Well, I'm really trying to arbitrage down and solve problems. I'm trying to do the problem solving in basically two different ways. One of them is to get the future pick flexibility so that way I can address the position later on. And the other thing is to try and get a profile that's very similar, right, as the one that I have. But get him plus some additional things to help me with. So I'll use some examples here that I just found in, it's been football guys trades or different stuff that I've done or different stuff that I've seen. But a good example that I think is like Dobbins, Pollard, and a future second for Mixon and a future first. When I sort of looked at this, like this is actually kind of an arbitrage. Like this is arbitraging up and down a little bit. I just took this as basically like, all right, I think Mixon's better than Dobbins. Right? So you actually moved up the board there. The other one that you did though was you moved Pollard in the pick for a first, right? Again, so I think like making those moves around the position where you can get pick upgrades, like, that's a big deal, right? So this is actually almost a consolidation trade. But you're consolidating up to an elite asset of a future first. I found that one pretty savvy, right? That's not the typical build that I would do. I'd be kind of looking at it this the other way. I would kind of be looking at this in like the, all right, I want to get the Dobbins Pollard in a first side of this. Is like, I want to get the pick upgrade on that side. But I found this one to be pretty interesting in terms of getting the pick upgrade going the other way. Some other ones here, Akers, right? A pivot down from Akers to Connor. Picking up Robert Woods in a second. Again, could we nitpick, right? We could probably take like, I'd rather have someone other than Robert Woods. The principle's more, hey, this is a potential solving an issue at wide receiver, but I'm getting a running back that I project relatively similar, and I'm getting that future second, which is flexibility to make another deal, right? That's really the thing that you're looking for here. Another one, Dobbins for Miles Sanders in a first, right? Again, I'm giving myself multiple outs here. Maybe Miles Sanders can pace Dobbins, but that first gives me a lot of flexibility and a lot of liquidity to potentially do this with. Another medium measure that I would think, right, again, and I'm thinking, like, by and large, between, like, the running back, like, the low-end running back one to sort of running back, through running back two tier, right, that type of solution at that position. And so I think this is a good place to really target guys that are projected in the top 12 of the position, but are outside the top 12 in dynasty cost. And it's particularly trades, like, I think the tactic you want to use there is don't spend future first to do it, right? I think that's really, like, kind of your goal, right? Top 12 production, outside the top 12 in dynasty cost, and, you know, you're not spending high-end production to do it. Some candidates for that, Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara, Leonard Fournette, James Conner, right? There's some guys there, and I just sort of just picking some deals here. I just saw some Aaron Jones ones, like Aaron Jones for 109, like that. Aaron Jones for Amari Cooper. Again, what are you doing? You're pivoting across the positions. Aaron Jones for Mike Williams, right? All of those deals, I think, are pretty savvy in terms of giving yourself an uptick position an uptick shot at the running back position at a cost that frankly isn't going to beat you. It doesn't really beat you all that often. That's really the thing that I would say. Some additional ones here, like Leonard Fournette, like this is an easy one. Leonard Fournette for Devin Singletary in 214. Like that's really, and that's again, super flex, one tight end, but it's tight end premium. It's 14 teamer. You know, what are you getting out of that other side? Right. I just love that deal. Fournette for Higbee and two tight end is interesting. Fournette for Christian Watson. Again, you're doing a couple of these things. It's sort of that, like a later first type valuation, but you're moving from wide receiver to tight end, wide receiver to running back. I think that's interesting. Another medium at, like, Zeke could actually fit in this one. I found a trade that has some of these principles sort of in it. A first, a second last year, which is 211. Actually, the trade was just made, though, so it's interesting. It must be like an August rookie draft. James Robinson, Kenny Ngonwu, right? So basically a first, a couple of seconds, and some throwing players, and you're getting Zeke, Leonard Fournette, and Tyler Lockett. Right, again, it kind of violates the top 30 rule in terms of that future first, but you're getting multiple solutions at the position. Like, I think that's an interesting, like, it's kind of an interesting way to go about some of these solutions. So that's some of the plays that I would go with. You know, there's another one here, Josh Jacobs in a future second for Leonard Fournette, Mike Williams in a future third. Right, you're thinking about ways to pivot. I think that's a, right, you're giving yourself a lot more options, a lot more outs. I wonder if that deal is made today. That's like a rookie draft time deal. That's one back in like later May. So I wonder if like those deals are getting made right now. But you sort of get the idea, right? You move down, right, and you figure out a solution at the at a different position or at the running back position, right, by sort of arbing down, right? I think that's a way to go. That's really sort of the medium fix, because then what are you doing, right? Like that, like how does that fix running back for you, right? Well, you might like Fournette better than Josh Jacobs, but really what you're doing is you're saying, okay, like now I've got Mike Evans, and what I can really do now is I can potentially, right, I'm sort of lengthening out my wide receiver core, and then I can sort of use that again to deal from depth and address running back, right? So you're sort of broadening out your team's depth by sort of drawing down at running back, sort of arbing down. But over the long term, you're able to, or should be able to, or your ultimate goal should be to say, okay, now I've got some wide receiver depth that I can come back in the next 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, and address the running back position, right? Those are the types of deals that we're thinking about and doing in sort of the medium range of the position. So arbing down or sort of targeting these guys at non-future first type valuations, and that can give you a big deal. Again, candidates I think about right now doing this with Kamara, Fournette, Connor, Zeke's a good one, because they don't cost that much. And I think that those are some helpful deals as well. Again, if you're going to pay, like here's a couple of good ones I think for Kamara. Kamara and Amari Cooper, the person gave up Kadarius Toney 107 and Jameis Winston. So there's some stuff going on there about like, all right, well, how, you know, I'd like to know a little bit more about the quarterback situation and all that stuff. But if you're thinking about it, like you're not paying future first, and you're sort of getting, you're not speculating with future assets. You're not sort of tying, you're not taking a mortgage out on a depreciating asset, which is what a running back is. And you're like paying it right now and saying, okay, I'm 107. I'm a playoff team. How do I sort of jumpstart my team? Right. That's, I think, a good way to do it. Right. You think of some other things here, like Alvin Kamara for Daniel Jones and Cordarrelle Patterson, right? Again, if you've had some depth at quarterback, right, this is why building some depth, even if you don't necessarily love the players long-term at premium positions, can help you because you can make deals like this, right? Even if you don't love Daniel Jones, having Daniel Jones allows you to make a trade like this. So some good stuff there in terms of like how to potentially address the position, just trying to give you some different ideas to sort of to be thinking about. Full measures, right? So these are like kind of your expensive ones, right? Your top 10 guys, maybe even more expensive than that. But you're talking about really expensive players. I don't typically like to do deals in this range. I was sort of having like a brain dump today in the AOD chat. And one of the things that I was talking about, like as I was sort of thinking about this concept, thinking about some of this writing stuff that I'm doing, thinking about this podcast, is planning it out, is when you, like, if you want to go for an expensive fix at the position, the problem is you're kind of taxed on it twice, right? You are paying for what is ultimately a depreciating, like it's a very risky asset, right? And it's one that's probably going to depreciate pretty quickly in terms of high-end running backs, right? They're either very productive or they're going down in price, right? And sometimes they're both. But if you're sort of making a deal for that, like again, in you're a lot of times being forced into making a deal at the top of the market too, right? Like look at the guys up at the top of the board and tell me which ones you think are actually underpriced, right? This is the fun part when you get to it and you start looking and say, which one of these guys is actually undervalued, right? Which one's undervalued? Well, you say, all right, is it Jonathan Taylor running back one, Najee Harris running back two, Swift and Damien and Javonte Williams are both have a median of four, right? Are any of those guys undervalued? Christian McCaffrey's at five, right? He'll be a trend here for in a second. Christian McCaffrey's at five, right? Then you get Breece Hall, Eckler, six and seven. Joe Mixon has a median of 8.5, Cook at 10, Barkley at 11, Etienne's up at 12. So you're starting to get into sort of that next range of the position, but I'm going to just highlight a couple of other guys that I think are, you know, sort of have that high solution, right? Kamara at 14, he sort of fits this theory as well. Fournette later on, right? But like, how do you get, like those guys I don't think are necessarily elite. Those aren't elite cost guys. I'm looking more at like high cost guys. Like, what do you feel good about doing in there? Well, I think you can arb down, right? Like that's one way to go about it. But we're talking about like, how do you actually get one of these guys? And I think the way to get one of them is almost, I think you have to sort of, if you're trying to trade for one of these guys, I think the angle of it is you just take the guy that is coming off the injury or that has a suspension risk. Because what you're getting with them, right, there's no world in which McCaffrey should be projected less than Javonte Williams unless McCaffrey's coming off an injury, right? Under almost no set of circumstances, McCaffrey's still, like over the next couple of years, And I think that's really how the Josh Jacobs experience has really taught me this, which is like, all right, even if you have like a young guy sort of in his performing well in his early 20s, like the market can still really turn sour on you. Like you can't really trust the market to sort of keep these guys inflated in price, even if they're good and maybe not necessarily elite, but that he's definitely checked the box of being good over the course of his rookie deal, right? And if Javonte Williams sort of does what Josh Jacobs did over the past couple of years, I would consider that a success. And like, that's nowhere near what McCaffrey's capable of over the next couple of years, right? And then, like, I don't know, Josh Jacobs is already like outside the top 20 running backs. Like, what value have we preserved, right? Where would McCaffrey be after that? Like, I don't know. I just, that experience has kind of taught me that I don't trust necessarily the long-term value preservation in running back. I'd much rather be sort of arbing down the position generally, right? And sort of away from high-priced running backs because of that factor, unless you get them at a discount. And I think McCaffrey is the one that you can get at a discount, right? He's coming off an injury. Everyone is concerned at the running back position that the prices, long-term because, oh, everyone's like, they're hurt, right? Well, the injuries, like, they're injury risks, right? Sure. But the injuries are, I think, largely random. Like, we don't have a ton of great evidence to say that guys are injury prone. And even if we did, we wouldn't know it, right? Like, we wouldn't know if guys are predisposed to, that they've got problems with their muscles that make them predisposed to soft tissue injuries. Like, we wouldn't know that. And even if they've had a couple of them, like that, like a lot of that could be variants, right? We don't know enough to be able to predict that and say that with actual any confidence, but the market definitely buys it. And so as a result, what you see is guys like McCaffrey, who've been coming off of injuries, are depressed in price. And so they offer almost the unique opportunity for high upside at a discount, a running back. And so that's really the thing that I think the solution to dealing with, like if your question is how do I get an elite running back? How do I get a high-end running back? How do I get a running back that can really make a difference, right? That's way, way up the board, an expensive running back. How do I address a expensive running back? Well, generally don't do it. But if you're going to do it, like do it with a guy that's either coming off an injury or has some sort of suspension risk. Kamara's a good one, right? Or, you know, he's got the, you know, he's fat, Fournette problem. Like do something like looking for situations like that, where I think people are depressed and a lot of the fears at the running back position are actually baked into the cost specifically with that player, right? I think that's the way to go about addressing the position at an expensive way. I'd rather just take a lot of shots in rookie drafts, right? Take a lot of shots on day two running backs and rookie drafts, right? Because, you know, just keep add them up. Like those are what turn into your high-end backs, right? If you've just taken running backs in the first round of rookie drafts recently, Jonathan Taylor, Najee Harris, DeAndre Swift, Javonte Williams, right? Heck, Christian McCaffrey, Breece Hall, Mixon, Cook, Barkley, Etienne, right? Like Derrick Henry was like a second. He was a first rounder as well. Nick Chubb. Right? I mean, if you're just sort of taking them in mass, like this, they're all up there in terms of cost, right? So that's sort of, instead of drafting wide receivers there, just kind of draft the running backs, and that's, you'll get cracks at them. And that's kind of how I would address it, you know, long term. But if you're trying to sort of in the short term, try to get some high upside with a higher price guy, it's got to be, I think you want to do it with guys that are already reduced in price because they feel like risks, because I think the market is depressing them at a price that's probably more so than they warrant. So yes, those are basically some thoughts on addressing your positions. Again, I've kicked it around. I think the idea of like just store up assets so that way when people get scared, you can buy. Like I like that idea. That was Matt's from the chat. Like I like that idea. I always like to have picks in storage. Like I don't like to plan future credit unless it's an elite quarterback. Because I want to be able to address positional problems when they come up. Right. And I think you can do that in season. But again, that's I think you're looking here, the expensive guys, you're looking for multi-seasonal approaches, right? Just being principled and being constantly churning the back end of your roster. I think you can do that at the running back position pretty well. So there's some thoughts there for you in terms of fixing running back. I hope that helps. Again, anytime you can pivot from wide receiver to running back and sort of squeeze your roster, right? I think squeeze your wide receiver core. I think that's a really good way to do it, and to be thinking about that constantly, sort of making that a point to be doing on your roster. So, all right, that'll do it for this episode, the Sunday strategy session. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.